You're listening to Grammy Award-winning compositions by women on Into the Light. I'm Catherine Michelle. The other pieces on Tower's winning album are her Concerto for Orchestra, which we have aired on Into the Light before, and a new piece called Timbre, which I'd like to play next. Before we get to the piece, I'll play a few minutes of an interview I did with Joan Tower. Since this is a program about women winning Grammys, we'll get some of Tower's views on women as composers. Let's talk a little bit about the woman composer thing. I'm assuming, as I think all women composers think of themselves simply as composers and don't want to think of themselves as women composers. But is there anything in your experience in which you are really feeling like a woman composer, either in the way you're treated by
Well, first of all, I have to tell you that I do like the fact, and I do mention it, that I am a woman.
Uh-huh.
And that's alongside of living.
Yes.
And those two things carry a lot of weight for me.
Yeah.
I don't apologize for that at all. I don't hide that. Mm-hmm. It's a fact. It's a fact. And I'm very outspoken about both issues.
I will assume you don't want to be, let's say, compared to other women composers as much as, or thought of, the body of composers in general.
No.
Right.
No. But, see, there are certain facts that you just are stuck with.
Right.
But they can carry significant social and cultural issues with them. And I'm a fighter for both of these issues, the living composer and the woman composer.
Right.
And that's just a fact. I say to audiences, okay, how many of you have heard a woman composer? Two hands go up. They're not aware of this fact at all. See, it's a fact. It's a fact. So I said, well, you're about to hear me. And it's just a reminder that they're missing. They're missing out on things. Well, how many living composers have you heard? Three, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then how many women? None.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. I'm just bringing up some factual issues. Mm-hmm. That's all.
Well, that's why we're trying to bring them into the light.
Right.
Have you ever felt at a disadvantage for being a woman in what is primarily thought of as a man's world?
Well, I think the statistics, if you look at them, are pretty miserable, actually. And I've never had any overt, you know, signs of we don't want you here because you're a woman or whatever.
Good.
I've never, nobody in my field is that dumb. You know what I mean? They're pretty smart people that I deal with.
Yeah.
But you just, all you have to do is look at the statistics and then you see what's actually falling out.
Well, maybe you can help me with a question that I get asked all the time, and I have difficulty answering, and that people ask me, why aren't there any great women composers, you know, like Beethoven and Mozart?
Why aren't there any, do they also say why aren't there any great living male composers?
Sometimes they do, actually, and that's another good question, or, you know, it's another question that I feel that I get asked, let me say. It's a good question because people ask it a lot.
I think there
must be a need to have it answered. That's what I mean.
The history is so complex and so undeniably not designed to promote women writing music. I mean, that goes way back because women were not allowed to be professionals, et cetera, et cetera. It's a whole complex history.
Or educated.
So how could there be any great women composers if they weren't being allowed to even show their wares, like Fanny Mendelssohn?
Mm-hmm.
She had to do all her concerts at home, whereas her brother was supposed to be out in the world making his profile more visible. And she and he had the exact same education. So that's an interesting example of how women were not promoted at that time because there was a comparative
person, her brother. Right. You know? So the question of why were there not any great women is a whole sociological, historical tapestry that you have to look into to answer the question. Now we have the opportunity of changing that.
Do you think it has already changed, or do you think we have a long way to go? Where are we?
Well, the musicologists play a major role in this, right? Because they write the books about it, and now we have biographies of Ruth Crawford Seger, Amy Beach, Fanny Mendelssohn. And so now there's starting to be a scholarly, stamp of approval mm-hmm. that there were, in fact, some women, you know, who struggled. And all those women struggled a lot to write music and to have it heard. And some of them gave it up, like Ruth Crawford. I think now those doors have changed. Now a woman can write music and have it played by orchestras, by soloists, it's all now happening. This is all very, very late in the game, in the history game, as compared to the field of literature, or the field of dance, or the field of poetry, of the other arts. We are way behind, historically speaking, because music is a particularly stubborn art form.
Tower loves percussion. Although born in New Rochelle, New York, she moved to La Paz, Bolivia when she was 9 because her father had worked there as a geologist and mining engineer. She quickly acquired the Latin culture's love of rhythm, thanks largely to her nurse, who went dancing every night with her young charge in tow. Tower says, "They'd throw me a percussion instrument and I'd play maracas or castanets all night. I had a ball." I'll read you her notes about tambor. This 15-minute work features the percussion section, whose members essentially have 3 functions inside the orchestra: to underscore the different timbres and rhythms in other sections of the orchestra, to act as counterpoint to the orchestra, and to serve as sectional soloists in several minor and major cadenzas throughout the work. While I was writing this piece, the strong role of the percussion began to influence the behavior of the rest of the orchestra to the point that the other instruments began to act more and more like a percussion section themselves. In other words, the main action of the work becomes more concerned with rhythm and color than with motives or melodies, though these elements do make occasional appearances here and there. Tambor was commissioned by Maris Janssens and the Pittsburgh Symphony, who gave the premiere in May 1998. It is dedicated to Pittsburgh Symphony's Vice President of Artistic Planning, Robert Moir. As we listen to this piece, notice the difference in the complexity of her writing when she knows it will be played by the likes of the Pittsburgh Symphony rather than the various regional players who would be playing Made in America.